In this episode, we get a little spacey with Elon Musk, talk about what it means to be a true friend and the different levels of disruption for yourself or your business. You are listening to the Fifth Hammer Growth Podcast, where we help you find harmony in imperfection as you journey towards success in life and in business.
I was going through reels and I do that every once in a while. And I always send out the ones that I think are like that hit us, like are close to us. And this quote was like, a real friend doesn't just accept you for who you are. That's not a real friend.
Right, right.
Right.
Love you for who you are.
So screw the platinum rule. A real friend does not accept you for who you are.
What's better than platinum?
Titanium. Yeah, this is the titanium rule.
A real friend will challenge you to be better. He sees in you the potential of who you can be, and he'll challenge you to be that. That's what a real friend is. Yeah. And Spencer shot back like, who is that? Who's that to me? And I see it in you guys, man. And I hope you see it in me, because I think that's really like, that's what a real friend is. And there's a couple of those real friends. A real friend is the guy that you could call at 3 a.m. that will freaking help you go bury a body. That's a real friend. He won't even ask a question. He already has the freaking shovel in the truck and he's going for it. Right. Yeah. And those are rare, few and far between.
I think to get there though, you have to start by accepting the person for who they are and loving them for who they are, and then challenging them to see more. So I think it's kind of like an and both. Like you guys are definitely that for me. There's an example I tell a lot where, you know, I haven't been good about putting myself out there for the people I love, facing my fears for them. And we were sharing a story and you were like, you Fletcher.
Yeah, you went jet skiing with your new team that the project you're working on. Yeah. I'm like, what?
And it literally, you calling me out made me just, and Shonda had been doing that for years, by the way, calling me out and like saying it hurt her feelings. I'm like, yeah, but this is who I am. But in that moment, I realized, man, he's a real friend. I like hurt his feelings a little bit, you know, so I really appreciate that. A quote that I've started to adopt a lot is great relationships are built on equal parts care and challenge.
Yeah. So you know what I'm doing for us, right? I'm planning our next executive retreat, which is going to go ride the largest roller coaster in the world. Just so you know.
Well,
he wants to see Dave pee his pants and me throw up.
So. Yeah, I'll be like, I'll just pass out.
Freaking love it. But challenging people is critical. It's key to success. And if you think about the person, I think who challenges everybody is Elon Musk. I mean, that dude challenges everybody in everything he does, and he pushes the limit. And that's the beauty of the story that I think we're going to go over today.
When I first walked in, we were talking about this, and I remember maybe 2005 or so reading stories about, I didn't even know who Elon Musk was, but I just remember this crazy dude raising funding to build his own rocket ships to go to Mars.
Yeah.
And the tones of the articles were like, he's nuts. And people were kind of laughing at him.
Well, and isn't that the case? Mm-hmm. I mean, you want to talk about disruption. Elon Musk has disrupted the industry in multiple ways, in multiple industries. PayPal, for example, was a huge success. And that gave him, that was the catalyst to other success.
Tesla. Well, and not just for him, but for how many, you know, you look at the PayPal cohort of businesses and entrepreneurs that came out of PayPal. Yeah. PayPal was a freaking incubator.
Yeah. You know? But he took that on as his role. And that's what I love about what he did, is he took that on as setting people up for success, but challenging them to do their best and to have ridiculous timelines on things. Tesla's the same way.
Right.
So I have a Tesla, and I got a Tesla because when the zombie apocalypse happens and in the the energy crisis goes down and we can't have gas, I still can drive around. I'll come get you guys and bring you eggs, right? So I deliver eggs on Saturday morning in my Tesla because it's cheap to do so, right? But the disruption of those industries have been kind of core to who he is and what he's trying to accomplish. And I think you look at his Twitter and you look at what he's doing, he's branching out in disruption in other areas. I mean, he bought Twitter to disrupt it, right? He bought Twitter because he was sick and tired of being freaking censored.
Right.
And he wanted to disrupt the social media industry. So disruption is you look at like influencers and some of the most disruptive people out there. I mean, he's at the top of the list in my mind.
Well, yeah. And you talk about it's levels of disruption, right? One of the last stories we talked about was Woolen Prince, right? And the level of disruption, maybe it wasn't that disruptive, but it was unique enough, right? Liquid Death, maybe a little bit more disruptive. But if you want to talk about someone that's the pinnacle of disruption as an entrepreneur and as a leader, I mean, who better than Elon Musk? You're
literally, he's looking at leaving Earth, going to Mars. Like, that's something a little kid would say.
Right?
You know what I mean?
But here's the crazy thing about how he's doing it. So we're talking about SpaceX. And the whole goal behind SpaceX is to be able to populate Mars. I mean, if you look at their charter and you look at what he talks about, he's like, someday we want to be able to populate Mars, which is a ridiculous freaking goal. But it's so far out there that it's so far out there that what if he only gets 80% to that goal? What is he
lands in the middle of nothing.
But you know what I mean?
I'm kidding. I'm kidding, dude.
He lands in the middle of nothing and everybody dies.
80% goes past the moon.
But you think about what does he accomplish from driving his team to that? Right.
Right, right, right. Right.
And so you think about what he looked at. He looked at like, okay, space exploration is currently owned by the government. Yeah. NASA owns it. And what happens is large companies like Lockheed and that go into these contracts, they go into these contracts that are cost plus. So basically, if they win a contract, so if these large companies win a contract, they're basically incentivized
to spend money.
To spend money, to never finish the project. If they show incremental touch points or incremental progress, or if they hit certain markers along the way, even if they're late at it, they get all of their costs are paid, which include, like, if you look at some of these cost structures, it includes executive salaries and everything associated with it. And then there's the plus on the end. So it's a cost plus
contract.
Yeah. Contract. And he's like, that's absolutely ridiculous.
So this is the problem, right? This is the problem that he's identified.
Yeah.
Right. This is a stagnant, stale, this is wrong financial incentive for these big behemoth companies getting government money, right? Tax paying people's money, and they're incentivized to just milk it and never complete a mission.
And he said it's sucking on the tit of government.
Yeah.
Right?
Did he say teat though?
Teat. Sucking on the teat of government. But you think about it, that's the whole structure. And he's like, there is no innovation in space exploration because of the way it's financed and because of the way things are put together.
Oh, I love you so much.
Why?
What? You just dropped sucking on the tit of government.
Dude. But isn't that...
No, Elon dropped it. He's just quoting.
I'm quoting. But you think about it. That's exactly what's going on. And so there's no innovation. How do you drive innovation if there's no reward to innovation?
Right. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and this goes back to a conversation we've had on another project and even from the microbe time is incentive. Show me the financial incentive. And I think it was Charlie Munger or someone that said something like this, like, show me your incentive and I'll show you your result.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The way that you set up a financial incentive, whether it's a commission package to a sales team or it's whole industry, right? Like funding, show me the result.
Yeah, so nobody in the space program really wants to.
Well, they innovate. Want to. I mean, there's engineers that are coming up with some really cool things, but the motivation behind their drive is a paycheck.
Yeah, right, right, right.
I mean, that's all it is.
Well, and that's what I'm trying to say is that's their North Star is take care of the families, you know?
Yeah.
And then it so does the government own the airspace really to get to
All debate, right? So that's all debated right now. That's all super debated. And he's challenging that in what he's doing. But the thing that I love about this is he turned around And I took some notes. And so he turned around, and if you think about it, he challenged his team with deadlines that were outside, like extremely outside aggressive. Of the norm of space development.
If it typically took 10 years, he wanted to take 3.
Yeah.
Right. And he pitched the government, you're not going to pay us until we actually accomplish a mission.
Yeah.
So he would self-fund the work.
Yep.
Right. And then he wouldn't get paid unless they actually hit a deadline and accomplish a mission.
And
that's the, so he, again, he changed the whole financial structure, the whole model.
So he, so self-fund, he got a project. He's like, nope, we're not going to do this. When we accomplish this, you'll pay us. So he self-funded it. But the thing that I love about it is that, and this is the note, one of the notes I took, the space team learned to embrace failure as an inherent part of innovation. Each setback was not a roadblock, but a stepping stone, a valuable lesson that propelled them forward. So he gave them crazy freaking deadlines, and they failed constantly to hit those deadlines. But they didn't have the, well, you guys all suck, you're all fired conversation. They looked at it and reviewed it. And what they did is they created a culture of embracing the 80%.
Well, and I think you and I have talked a little bit about this in past conversations of, man, sometimes I get really tired of these people that say, shoot for the stars and you'll hit the moon.
Right.
Right. Like, you create some crazy ass BHAG with actual no real substance strategy behind it. Right. Like, let's just put a target right here that we can hit and start hitting targets. And then we move the target farther. Right. So there's this kind of like two polar opposite ends of thinking. What's really unique about this story and what you just described, Ryan, is he did put crazy ass targets out there and they failed at them. But because they were so crazy, it forced them to think in a 10X mindset, right?
Think like differently.
Completely different than how the whole industry was ingrained.
I still think it was the expectation that that's okay. Like, the reason why I feel like I hate that whole philosophy is the expectation was like the conversation didn't match the reality. So, well, if we shoot for the stars and land on the moon, everything's good. But then like when you would land on the moon, they'd be like, well, what happened? And then you would see people lose their jobs or you would really get drilled, but it didn't have the culture. There wasn't like a culture of safety around that as a failure or as a win.
Right.
So then I developed this like mindset of stacking wins, because that's really actually more inherent to human behavior, is to get the next win and get the next win and just keep moving the ball down the field versus constantly trying to hit a home run out of the stadium, striking out every day. But then, you know, I think they're both valuable approaches, but if you're going to swing for the fence and miss 9.5 out of 10 times, you have to go in with the right mindset that that's actually going to happen. And we're not going to
be okay with the failure piece.
Yes. We're not going to pick apart the fact that you missed. We're going to keep looking at why you missed and just keep trying to hit the next one.
And that's the key. And I think
that's the difference.
I think the idea of, well, we're going to shoot for the sun and hit the moon. That's not the concept,
right?
That's not what he was doing.
Yeah.
Right. I heard this interview with Kobe, and he's talking.
Kobe Bryant?
Yeah, I'm bringing up basketball because like you guys are basketball, dude. Right? So I'm bringing up I heard this interview with Kobe, and he's like, how many times do you shoot the ball? And the guy, and he's talking to this kid, and he's like, well, you know, in a game, how many times you shoot the ball in a game? How many times did you score? He's like, how many times did you miss? He's like, why weren't you perfect? He's like, then why do you expect yourself to be perfect? If you know you're not going to be perfect, then why are you so frustrated? Why do you get in your head when you miss? He's like, that missing's going to happen. Accept it. You're going to miss, but you're also going to make it. So don't get in your head when you miss. And I think that it's not a shoot for the stars and hit the moon. It's shoot for the sun. It's not that kind of mentality. It's shoot for your goal and accept the fact that you're going to have mistakes. You're going to have challenges. You're going to embrace, you're going to have failure. It's okay to have failure. And it's kind of like the conversation that we were talking about on text the other day was a conversation with a leader that like thinks the 80% rule is crap. Mm-hmm. 80% is crap. 80% is not perfection. 80% will never get us there. This isn't 80%. It's 70%. You know, and it's like, that's the wrong mindset. if you can achieve, and I did the math and I looked at your spreadsheet. I think your spreadsheet, Spencer sent me the spreadsheet of like how many iterations does it take if you do 80% every
time. How far
time.
Off am I?
Yeah. So the problem
I'm not correct.
and the spreadsheet, your spreadsheet was accurate.
Sure.
But I think the challenge is there is in the actual completion of the 80% over and over and over and log. If you go into math and utilize N equals plus log and the whole concept, really it comes down to 5 iterations.
Right.
5 iterations will get you above 99%.
And we'll dive into this in a future episode deeper. But I think part of that representation is the incremental gain of every attempt is minuscule.
It's not worth the effort.
The first attempt is really the one that matters.
I've had leaders stop down entire marketing departments to change a handful of words in something. And it was all, you know, it was 80%, it was 70%. And maybe those words maybe got us to 75. And we lost out on so much momentum just to keep rolling. And there was so much like frustration and conversation around why we were doing that. But to your point, what like you actually reminded me of another Kobe Bryant quote where, you know, he was retiring and he was saying, you know, it's not about, he essentially just said, it's not about the outcome. Like you start in on something dreaming about this like mountaintop that you're going to reach. And you get up every day and you work hard. And then you get up on the days you don't want to work and you work anyways. And then you stay up late and you work. He said, that's actually the dream. And I think what you're describing about Elon and this, like, you know, kind of what we're talking about, embracing failure, it's really about embracing the process.
Yeah.
Because I think if you can just embrace the process of whatever you want to call it, like sprint methodology, where you identify, you're pulling in ideas that you want to test and you're testing the idea and you're able to disconnect sort of emotionally from it and just roll through and then review the work and then go right back in, you're gonna eventually, the more cycles you turn is where the home runs come from.
But here's the beauty of that 80% rule. And I love it. And yeah, we'll go deeper on this, but I'm going to bring it back and apply it to SpaceX, because in the first iteration, if you're at 80%, you have 20% left. In the second iteration, if you hit 80% of that 20%, you've done 16%. And now you have 4% left. So what you really have in the second iteration,
96.
You're at 96%, which is two iterations is huge of accomplishing your goal. So it's not the fact that you failed the first iteration because you only got to 80% there, is you succeeded to get 80% of your goal. Second iteration, you're at 96% of your goal. There's only 4% left. And if you consider the concept of what Elon did with the SpaceX team, is he challenged and challenged and challenged them with goals that were so fast and so crazy that they were able to hit the mark, even though they didn't succeed in the overall task, they hit the mark that allowed them to accomplish it. And they put their first rocket into orbit in less than 6 years, which was crazy fast for all the work and effort they did. And they then in turn, their next goal was, we need a rocket that can actually take a payload to the International Space Station and return. And they hit it in time frames that like nobody expected. So everybody in the beginning, when he was like, yeah, I'm going to do this, I'm going to self-fund space exploration, and we're going to, you know, colonize the freaking Mars, and everybody freaking was like, this dude's nuts. He accomplished things that people said were impossible.
And he did it at the different levels of what was available to him and the capacity that they had. Like, he didn't go from no rocket to colonizing Mars. He went from rocket to, let's see if we can just get off the ground and come back down.
Right.
And then let's see if we can get to space. And then let's see if we can get here. I think that's
to orbit and then get to the space station. Yeah. And then,
And it's the iteration of those steps that have been.
He wasn't trying to go from zero to Mars in the first attempt.
Yes. And what I'm trying to say is, it's the iteration within the version that you're in. So like I've been a, you know, marketing leader in companies where the vision was this big giant marketing thing, like this, like a certain look and a certain vision for marketing. And what gets lost is the getting there.
You don't get there overnight.
You don't.
Yeah.
You know, you get there maybe over the course of 3 years. Let's be real. Maybe five. You know, if you want to invest, you can invest into like an expert rock star team and do it faster, but it's still going to take you more time than you think it's going to take.
Always does.
Always does. Yeah. Always does. And if you have the discipline to stay the course, if you have the discipline to review your failures and turn those into opportunities and drive forward in the next iteration, if you have that discipline, and I loved what the other note that I took on this was SpaceX has emerged not just as a pioneer in space exploration, but as a beacon for startups everywhere. Proof that audacity, innovation, and courage to embrace failure can launch the seemingly impossible into the realm of reality, right? That is truly where he went. This was the impossible dream. But you know what? The closer they get to doing what they're doing, the more real it becomes.
How do you think Elon Musk leads? Does he lead from the front, the back? Is he more sort of, does he move through, like lead from the side, middle? Does he tell the team what to do, meaning, or does he just set the objective and the timeline and allow them to take action?
I don't know.
It's a good question.
That's a great question.
It's a good question.
Enough about Elon to answer that. So I would just be making assumptions.
It's probably not an either. It's probably an and both or an and all. I'm sure he does all of it at different times. I mean, that's what, you know, conventional leadership wisdom would tell you. You lead based on the capacity and the knowledge or the experience of, you know, the person, the team. But
So it's interesting.
And here's why I bring that up, though. Real quick. I don't think as I've talked to teams over the years, a leader who leads from the front, oftentimes, and what I mean by is they're pointing at what to do, oftentimes will shut a team down because they feel like you don't trust them. So you can't embrace failure in that moment because they're not even giving full effort because they're playing safe to show up good for the leader. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyways, go ahead.
No, it's interesting. Recently saw new movies out, The Boys in a Boat. Have you guys seen this? Mm-hmm. Okay, watch it, because it's about the 1936 rowing team that goes to Olympics, that goes to the Olympics, but they were a junior varsity team from Washington that blew everybody away, and their coach was like, what team are you? Because they went to this regional against like Stanford and all these guys, and he's like, the winner of this meet goes on to the Olympics, goes to represent the United States. And they're like, so who are you going to put forward? And he's sitting there and he's like, my JV team, they're better than everybody. They have more heart, but they had less experience. None of them rowed before until they got to college. So they had less experience than the varsity team, but he's like, I'm going to take the JV team. And everybody freaked out. The boosters are like, what? My kid is, right? Everybody freaked out. He's like, no, I'm taking the JV team. But it's interesting, as he was building that team, they had a chalkboard and they had each seat in that boat. And they described in the movie, and the book is amazing. The book is really, really good. The movie obviously condenses the story into a single year. It actually took about 3 years, but they talked about how the front of the boat, the middle of the boat, and the back of the boat have different roles in the boat. You have your engine, you have your speed, you have your endurance, and it was interesting because you think, if you look at a boat, if everybody gets in the boat and starts rowing, you're all doing the same freaking thing. And not only that, but you're doing it in rhythm and in the right speed and the fashion. And the guy that's in the front is calling, is like, we're up to, you know, 35 strokes a minute. Let's go. Right. We're at 45 strokes. We're at 60 strokes. And it's like, and he drives the momentum, nice. But they're all doing the same thing. And for him to be able to turn around, and it's interesting because there's a scene that talks about, well, let's move number 12 into number 2 seat, number 3 into number 4 seat. Let's move these guys around. Who's here? Let's move them around. Let's try it. They go out and try it. Not come back. And they're moving people around in seats. Let's go try it. And it's the right person in the right seat at the right time. Wow. And as I was watching it, I was like, holy crap. And I think that's the beauty about what Elon, that's how Elon leads, mm-hmm. in my mind, mm-hmm. And I don't know, because I mean, I've just been following him and I read some of his stuff, but he puts the right people in the right seat for the right reasons.
Yeah.
Right. And really it's about building team. And how he does that, I don't know, because I've never been in the personal situation, but every time you hear him speak, he always talks about building team and putting people first and driving the team. And then he challenges them. Right. And I don't know a lot about rowing, so I don't know if these numbers are right, but he turns around and he says, you guys got to row like 42 freaking strokes a minute or 62 strokes a minute. And he challenges them to hit the mark that he needs to, but he gives them the ability to do it. And so I think what he does is he leads through excellence and he steps back and he watches the team do, and he interacts and he gets feedback and he challenges and he pushes ideas because he's not a space engineer.
Yeah.
He's just a leader.
Yes. Well, and I think the other tie back to SpaceX on this is how easy would it have been for that coach just to say, you know what, I'm going with my varsity team. I'm not going to piss off the boosters, not going to piss off the player, the athletes, right? This is the rule book. The unsaid, unwritten rules, right? We're going to do that. No, he rewrote the rules. He said, I'm going to put in my JV team, right? How many times has Elon rewritten the rules, right, of industries?
Right.
Right. And so much, whether it's even in social interactions at a holiday party, are we so unwilling and afraid to rewrite the rules or to break the unwritten rules, right? And sometimes disruption is that you're rewriting the whole rules for a financial structure for an entire industry, or you're just rewriting the rules of a relationship.